A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
So Daniel wrote to us about a friend who fell for an SSN scam. He walked them through the usual trusted tools. Mozilla Monitor, Have I Been Poonied, Dark Web Monitoring, and the friend hit him with a question that stopped him cold. How do I know those security tools aren't the crooks? And Daniel's honest answer is, he doesn't think they are, but he wants to know if scam SSN scam detectors is a known category of fraud, and if so, how to tell the real ones from the predators. It's the kind of question that sounds paranoid for about 3 seconds, and then you realize it's exactly the right thing to ask.
It's not paranoid at all. The friend's question is more sophisticated than most security advice you'll read online because it identifies the fundamental asymmetry. When you get breached, your instinct is to do something, install something, sign up for something, and that impulse is itself the attack surface. The people who self-select as having something to protect are the ideal targets for exactly the kind of Trojan Daniel's describing.
The security tool that eats your security.
Right? And it's not theoretical. There's a well-documented pattern here. In 2024 and 2025, researchers tracked a wave of fake antivirus apps on the Google Play Store that mimicked legitimate brands. Malwarebytes, Avast, names people recognize and trust. They looked professional, had SSL certificates, collected positive reviews, more than 500,000 downloads before Google pulled them. And once installed, they weren't scanning for malware. They were banking Trojans.
500,000 downloads of something called an antivirus that was actually the virus. That's almost poetic.
It's the perfect con. You're scared, you search best antivirus, you find something that looks right, you install it, you feel safer, and the whole time it's exfiltrating your credentials. The fake tool is the attack.
It reminds me of those old street scams where someone offers to watch your bag while you're at the ATM. The person presenting themselves as the protector is the one you need protection from.
Exactly the same dynamic. They're exploiting the gap between your recognition of a threat and your ability to evaluate the proposed solution. And that gap is where most security scams live.
So let's map that onto what Daniel's asking about. With SSN monitoring, the scam would work the same way. You just got a breach notification, or your friend just got hit, and you think, I should check if my SSN is on the dark web. You type that into Google. You find a service that promises to scan for you, and it asks for your full social security number, date of birth, address, mother's maiden name, the complete identity kit. And you hand it over because you're trying to protect yourself.
That's the part that makes this so insidious. A legitimate dark web monitoring service doesn't need your full SSN in plain text to function, but a fake one needs exactly that to monetize you. So the data collection itself is the tell, but only if you know what to look for.
And most people don't. Most people see a lock icon in the browser bar and think that means the site is trustworthy.
The SSL certificate fallacy. It's one of the most persistent misconceptions in consumer security. A padlock means the connection is encrypted, not that the person on the other end isn't a criminal. Every phishing site worth its salt has HTTPS now. Let's Encrypt made that trivial, which is a good thing for the web overall, but it means the visual trust signals people were trained to look for are meaningless.
I remember when the advice was literally, look for the lock. That was the entire consumer security education program for about a decade. And now, it's not just useless, it's actively misleading.
Because the threat model changed. When that advice was created, the main risk was someone intercepting your traffic on public Wi-Fi. Encryption solved that. Now the main risk is that the endpoint itself is malicious. Encryption between you and a criminal doesn't help you.
So we've got a category here. Scam SSN scam detectors. Daniel's phrase is absolutely real. It's the same playbook as fake antivirus, fake VPNs, fake phone cleanup apps. Find people who are proactively trying to protect something. Offer them a tool. Harvest what they were trying to protect.
And the fake VPN case is instructive because it shows this isn't limited to obviously sketchy apps. In 2023, there was the HolaVPN scandal, a free VPN service that was selling user bandwidth through a subsidiary called Luminati, essentially turning users into exit nodes for other people's traffic. They were also logging browsing data. Millions of users thought they were protecting their privacy, and they were actually renting out their own internet connections.
The Hola thing is wild because it was a real company with real funding. It wasn't some guy in a basement. It was a venture-backed startup that built a business model on reselling the very thing it promised to protect.
Which brings us to the core question. How do you verify the verifiers? If professional websites, SSL certs, app store listings, and user reviews can all be faked or manipulated, what's left?
Well, let's walk through what actually makes a tool like Mozilla Monitor different. Because Daniel mentioned it specifically, and it's a good test case, what's actually happening under the hood?
Mozilla Monitor, formerly Firefox Monitor, uses the Have I Been Pwned database, which is run by a security researcher named Troy Hunt. Have I Been Pwned is, in my view, one of the most trustworthy services in this space. For a simple architectural reason, it only asks for your email address, not your password, not your SSN, not your mother's maiden name, just an email. You type it in, it checks against a database of known breaches, and it tells you if that email appears in any of them.
Minimal data exposure by design. The service literally can't leak what it never collected.
Mozilla Monitor builds on that. The free tier works the same way, email-based breach alerts. The paid tier, Mozilla Monitor Plus, adds automated remediation and scanning for personal information like SSNs. But here's the architectural difference that matters. It doesn't store your SSN in plain text, it hashes it.
Explain hashing for people who haven't stared at cryptography documentation.
A hash is a one-way mathematical function. You put data in, you get a fixed length string of characters out. You can't reverse it to get the original data. So Mozilla Monitor takes your SSN, runs it through a hash function, and stores only the hash. When it scans breach databases, it's looking for that hash, not your actual SSN. If their servers were compromised, the attacker would get meaningless strings of characters, not social security numbers.
So it's like checking a coat at a restaurant. You hand over your coat, they give you a ticket with a number. That number only means something to the person who has the matching system. If someone steals the ticket, they can't reconstruct your code from it.
That's a decent analogy. The ticket is the hash. It's useful within the system, but meaningless outside it.
Whereas a fake monitoring service wants the plain text because that's the product they're selling.
Right. The data model tells you who the customer is. If the service needs your unhashed SSN, date of birth, and full address to scan for you, ask yourself why. A scan can be done against a hashed identifier. The only reason to collect plain text is if the data itself has value to the company beyond providing the service to you.
That's a good heuristic. What does the tool actually need to function versus what does it want to collect? If there's a gap between those two things, that gap is the business model.
And that's the framework. Let's formalize it. Three questions for any security tool. 1. What data does it need to function? 2. What's its business model? How does it make money? 3. Can you verify its claims through independent sources?
Walk me through each of those.
Question 1. What data does it need? A breach checker needs an identifier. That could be an email, like Have I Been Pwned? It could be a hashed SSN, like Mozilla Monitor Plus. It doesn't need your plain text SSN, your mother's maiden name, your bank account numbers, or your passwords. If a service asks for more than the minimum, that's a red flag. Not necessarily a scam, but it means you need to look harder at questions 2 and 3.
And question 2. The business model. Because free isn't always bad, and paid isn't always safe.
Right. Mozilla Monitor Plus costs money, about $9 a month for the paid tier. Mozilla is a non-profit. Their revenue comes from the Firefox browser's search partnership deals and from subscription services like Monitor Plus and Mozilla VPN. They publish audited financials. You can look up exactly where their money comes from. A fake tool has a business model too. It's just hidden. Either it's selling your data, installing malware, or both.
The Hola VPN case is the perfect example. Free VPN. But the business model was selling user bandwidth. The product wasn't the VPN. The users were the product, and the VPN was the lure.
And that's the key insight. With any security tool, ask who's the customer. If you're not paying for the product, you're the product. But even if you're paying, you still need to verify that the payment is actually the primary revenue stream, not just a side hustle to a data brokerage.
Which brings us to question 3, independent verification. This is the one most people skip.
And it's the most important. Before installing or subscribing to any security tool, spend 10 minutes searching for it on Reddit, on Hacker News, on security blogs. Not the company's own website, not the App Store reviews. Those are easily faked. Look for what actual security researchers say. Look for vulnerability disclosures. Look for the tool's history. Has it ever been caught doing something shady? Has it ever had a breach? And if so, how did it handle disclosure?
This is where Mozilla's structure actually helps. It's a known entity with a 20-plus year track record. It's not a shell company that appeared 6 months ago with a slick landing page and a bunch of stock photos.
And Troy Hunt, who runs Have I Been Pwned, is a named public security researcher. He's given talks at major conferences. He's written extensively about his methodology. His reputation is tied to the service. If Have I Been Pwned were caught doing something unethical, his career would be over. That's not a guarantee. People do bad things, but it's a meaningful signal. A service run by an anonymous entity with no public track record has no such accountability.
So we've got a way to evaluate individual tools. But there's a bigger problem here that Daniel's question points to, and I want to sit with it for a minute. The erosion of trust in legitimate security tools. When people can't tell the difference between Mozilla Monitor and a fake, what do they do?
They do one of two things. Either they stop using any monitoring at all, which leaves them more vulnerable. Or they pick wrong and hand their data to criminals, which is worse than doing nothing. Both outcomes are bad. And this is a structural problem, not just an education problem, because the fakes are getting better faster than most people's ability to evaluate them.
And here's the thing that keeps me up about this. If enough people get burned by fake security tools, the reputation damage spills over onto the legitimate ones. Mozilla Monitor isn't just competing with other real services. It's competing with a flood of imposters that make people suspicious of everything in the category.
That's the poisoning, the well effect. Every fake antivirus app that gets exposed doesn't just harm the people who installed it. It makes everyone slightly less likely to trust any antivirus app, including the real ones. The scammers aren't just stealing from individuals, they're degrading the trust infrastructure that legitimate security tools depend on.
AI-generated fake security tools. That's where this is heading, if it's not already here.
It's already here. We're seeing AI-generated websites with convincing copy, AI-generated logos, AI-generated review profiles. The entire surface-level presentation of a company can be fabricated in an afternoon. And the tools to do this are getting cheaper and better. So the old heuristics, does the website look professional? Are there reviews? Those are becoming actively misleading.
The professional-looking website used to be a trust signal. Now it's table stakes for a scam.
And that shifts the burden onto the user in a way that's honestly unfair. We're asking people to evaluate cryptographic architectures and business model transparency when they're already scared and in a hurry. That's a terrible environment for making good security decisions.
Which is exactly the environment the scammers are counting on. The breach notification hits your inbox, your heart rate goes up, you feel exposed, and you want to fix it right now. That urgency is the vulnerability.
So the meta lesson here, and I think this is what Daniel's friend intuited, is that in cybersecurity, the most dangerous moment is when you feel most proactive. The impulse to do something immediately after a breach is exactly what the fake tools are designed to exploit.
The fear is the attack surface.
Yes, and the countermeasure is counterintuitive. Slow down. The breach already happened. Your SSN is already out there. We've talked before about how SSNs are essentially public record at this point. The marginal risk of waiting 24 hours to research a monitoring service is basically zero compared to the risk of installing the wrong thing in a panic.
I want to underline that, because it's probably the single most actionable piece of advice in this whole conversation. The thing your brain is screaming at you to do right now, install something, sign up for something, click something, that's the thing you shouldn't do. Your amygdala isn't a security advisor.
The amygdala is an inside threat. It means well, but it has terrible operational security.
So what's the actual practical checklist? Someone's listening to this. They just got a breach notice. They want to do something. What do they actually do?
First, freeze your credit with all three bureaus. Equifax, Experian, TransUnion. That's free, it's effective, and it doesn't require installing anything. Second, use Have I Been PwnEd to check if your email is in known breaches. It only asks for your email, so there's essentially no risk. Third, if you want ongoing monitoring, Mozilla Monitor is a solid choice for the reasons we've discussed. Hashed identifiers, nonprofit backing, transparent architecture.
And the things you don't do?
Don't give your full SSN to a service you found through a search engine ad. Don't install a security app you found in an app store without verifying the developer. Don't click links in breach notification emails. Go directly to the service's website by typing the URL yourself. And don't trust a tool just because it costs money. Paid tools can be scams too.
That last point is worth underlining. People assume free equals risky and paid equals safe. But there are paid services that are essentially data harvesting operations with a subscription fee tacked on.
The credit bureau monitoring services are an interesting case here. Experian, Equifax, TransUnion, they all offer dark web monitoring and identity theft protection. They're legitimate companies. They're not going to install malware on your device. But their core business model is selling consumer data. They are, by design, data-hungry organizations. So when you sign up for their monitoring, you're giving more data to a company that already monetizes your information. Is that better than a scam? Obviously. Is it the gold standard? I'd argue no.
It's the devil you know versus the devil you don't.
And sometimes the devil you know is the right choice. If you're already in the Experian ecosystem because you have a credit freeze there, using their monitoring might make sense. But go in with your eyes open about what their incentives are.
Let's talk about one more thing Daniel raised, the no free lunch problem. He's right that free security tools should trigger skepticism. But I want to complicate that slightly, because some of the most trustworthy tools in this space are free. Have I Been PwnEd is free. The base tier of Mozilla Monitor is free. Signal is free. What's the difference?
The difference is the business model. Have I Been PwnEd is free because Troy Hunt runs it as a public service, and it's supported by donations and corporate sponsorships from companies that use his API. The free tier of Mozilla Monitor is a lead-in to the paid tier, and Mozilla's nonprofit structure means they're not optimizing for profit maximization. Signal is free because it's run by a nonprofit foundation funded by donations, including a $50 million initial grant from Brian Acton, WhatsApp's co-founder.
So free isn't the red flag. Free with no visible means of support is the red flag. If a company is offering a free security service and you can't figure out how they keep the lights on, assume you're the product.
And this connects back to the three-question framework. The business model question, how does this service make money, is often the most revealing. If the answer is murky or involves data partnerships that aren't clearly explained, walk away.
So to answer Daniel's question directly, yes, scam SSN, scan detectors, are absolutely a known category of fraud. They work on the same principle as fake antivirus, fake VPNs, and fake phone cleanup apps. They target people who are proactively trying to protect themselves, and they exploit the urgency and fear that follow a breach. The way to tell the real ones from the criminals is the three-question framework. What data does it need? How does it make money? And can independent sources verify its claims?
And the architectural tells. A legitimate monitoring service can work with hashed identifiers. It doesn't need your plain text SSN. A legitimate service has a name team with a public track record. A legitimate service has a business model you can look up and understand.
The friend's question was better than most security journalism. How do I know the security tools aren't the crooks? Is the question we should all be asking every time?
It's the question that cuts through the entire trust model of consumer cybersecurity. And the uncomfortable answer is that you can never be completely certain. But you can be reasonably confident if you do the work. Check the architecture, check the incentives, check the track record. And if you can't do that work in the moment because you're panicked, freeze your credit and wait until you can.
There's something almost philosophical here. The tools we use to verify trustworthiness can't themselves be verified without a certain amount of expertise. It's a bootstrapping problem. You need security knowledge to evaluate security tools, but you're seeking security tools because you lack security knowledge.
Which is why trusted intermediaries matter so much. This is the role that organizations like Mozilla or individual researchers like Troy Hunt play in the ecosystem. They're not perfect, but they've built reputations over decades that are expensive to fake and even more expensive to rebuild if they're damaged. That reputational cost is the real security guarantee, not the SSL certificate, not the privacy policy, not the App Store rating.
And as AI makes it easier to fabricate all the surface-level trust signals, those deep reputational signals become the only ones that matter.
We're heading toward a world where the only reliable way to trust a security tool is to trust the humans behind it, which is ironic, given how much of cybersecurity is about removing human fallibility from the equation.
The human element turns out to be the thing you can't automate away. The scam can fake the website, fake the reviews, fake the security badges. It can't fake 20 years of public accountability.
Not yet, anyway.
And that's the unsettling note to end on. Not yet. Because if you can fake the human track record, if you can simulate a 20-year reputation with deep-faked conference talks and AI-generated blog archives and synthetic social media histories, then we're in a world where the bootstrapping problem has no solution. You can't verify the verifier, because the verifier is a simulation.
That's the horizon problem. We're not there yet, but the trend line isn't reassuring, and it makes me think that the long-term answer isn't just better heuristics or better tools. It's probably something closer to a web of trust model, where you don't trust a service because of its own claims, but because it's vouched for by other entities you already trust.
Which is, in a way, what we're already doing when we recommend Mozilla Monitor or Have I Been Pwned. We're not saying trust these tools because they're perfect. We're saying we've looked at them, and here's why we think they're trustworthy, and you can go verify our reasoning. The recommendation is the beginning of the inquiry, not the end of it.
And that's a good place to land. The answer to, how do I know the security tools aren't the crooks, isn't a checklist that eliminates all uncertainty. It's a process that reduces it to an acceptable level. And the first step in that process is asking the question at all.
Daniel's friend asked the right question. Hopefully now he has a framework for finding the right answer. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1860s, a British naval officer stationed near the Caspian Sea attempted to introduce sepak takraw, the Southeast Asian kick volleyball sport, to the local port towns as a morale exercise. The game was abandoned after 3 weeks when a stray rattan ball struck a visiting Russian dignitary's horse, which bolted into the harbor. The incident was quietly expunged from the ship's log, and the officer was reassigned to a desk post in Bombay.
A rattan ball changed the course of a man's career.
The Caspian Basin almost had sepak takraw. We were this close.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumintop. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you listen. It genuinely helps other people find the show. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay curious, keep weird in mind.